The Precision Rifle Network podcast is brought to you by Securit Gun Storage Solutions for competitors, hunters, and operators. Let's get into this episode. All right, guys, welcome back to Precision Rifle Network podcast. This is probably around episode 15 or so. I have not been as regular as I would like with these. I apologize, guys. Just had a lot going on this spring, man, with kids graduating. Got a kid graduated from college, got a kid graduated from high school. All three of my oldest kids are all, you know, moving and or getting jobs, having to help them with that. Lots of excuses going on there, but they're family excuses, so they're good excuses for not being quite as regular with the podcasts. You know, I'm not much of a talker, so this is actually a bit of a challenge for me. At any rate, just want to take a moment right off the start to shout out our channel sponsors. Securit Gun Storage Solutions is a channel sponsor for us, and if you go to their website and you type in their webpage, and at the end of the web address, you put a slash PRN for Precision Rifle Network, you get a discount on products for shopping there. I don't get any kind of a kickback for you using that discount. It's just a pure discount to you guys and helps them kind of track their sales and do all that kind of stuff. So check out Securit Gun Storage Solutions. Those folks are good folks over there with a solid mission. And also check out Coltac for all of your kind of, you know, soft goods, sewn soft goods needs. Everything's from, you know, rifle cases to ground pads to barricade bags to little ditty bags to notebook covers to, you know, dope card holders for the side of your rifle. I mean, you name it, they got it. The ammo novels, still my favorite product that they make, but they make so many different things over there. Coltac, MK Machining, pretty much the world leader in 3D printed products. They do a lot outside of the firearm space, but they're pretty dominant in 3D printed products in the firearm space as well. Throw levers and all that kind of stuff. But they also have, you know, just a lot more stuff like optics and various things on their website to check out. Both Coltac and MK Machining, the coupon code to save you money there is PRN10. And then Axle Hearing Protection, use PRN15 to get you 15% off, I believe, in addition to any sales they have going on currently. And I think they have a 50% off sale going on right now. So I think I'm right about that. But regardless, you know, if you navigate there from one of the links under my YouTube videos, PRN will benefit and you get 15% off at a minimum. It might be, like I said, 50%. You might be able to stack those coupon codes. So please check out our channel sponsors. We couldn't do anything without them. So this one's probably going to be a little shorter. I want to talk mainly about this idea of zeroing an AR-15 type rifle, shooting 5.56 or 223, doesn't matter. Your standard, you know, let's say 16-inch barrel, 18-inch barrel, 20-inch barrel, 5.56, your standard AR-15 gas gun. They're just, I run into people all the time. It happened again at the range today. Guys that are super knowledgeable in long-range precision shooting had never heard of this concept. And so I just thought, you know, I'm gonna say it again. I'm just going to say it again. You know, on the podcast, I've said it in multiple videos. There's been multiple videos made about it, but I'm just going to say it again, that if you use a 36 yard zero on an AR-15 shooting a standard 55 grain projectile running at around 3000 feet per second, you have a zero at 36 yards. You then have an additional zero at right around 300 yards. Because, you know, you've got your line of sight, which is what your scope is. You're looking through your reticle or your red dot or whatever it is. That, in theory, is a straight line. It's line of sight. From your eye to the target draws a straight line. Your bullet actually comes out, you know, because your sight or your scope or whatever is mounted above your bore line where the bullet comes out of your barrel by a couple of inches, typically. it comes out below your line of sight and it crosses up above your line of sight into an arc, you know, your drop data arc, and then it drops back down onto another point. Where it crosses up the first time, that's where you're zeroed at. If it were 50 yards, it would cross up across your line of sight at 50 yards. If you were zeroed at 100 yards, it would cross up over your line of sight at 100 yards, yada, yada, you get the idea. I'm saying 36 yards. If you look at the math, you run the numbers in a ballistic solver with a 55 grain projectile running 3,000 feet per second or 3,100 feet per second or something like that, you will see with a 36 yard zero that the point at which that projectile comes back down across your line of sight is a secondary zero point. And if you zero at 36, you're again going to be zeroed around 300 yards, roughly. And the difference here is that a 36-yard zero, as far as the max ordinate, that's the top of the arc of your bullet, the travel path, as far above the line of sight as that's ever going to be, is something like 3.5 or 4 inches. It's just really not much. And that happens down around, you know, the halfway point. So 125 to 150 yards-ish. It would be as much as maybe 4 inches above your line of sight. And again, if you're shooting, you know, a chest size target on a human, let's say 14 to 16 inches, the torso of a human, that's a lot of room to play with. So you really can just hold center mass anywhere from 0 to 300 yards and get a center mass impact. And that's why we do it. It's a very efficient, very effective way to engage targets at slightly longer distances with an AR without having to hold over or dial or do any of the things. It's very advantageous. And it's different from a 25-yard zero or a 50-zero or a 100-zero because if you start just messing around in a ballistic solver with those numbers and you try the 25-yard zero, well, you'll see that things are a little bit different. You know, you zero at 25 and now all of a sudden your secondary zero is at, you know, a closer range or whatever it is. And your max ord is a much larger number, so not nearly as precise. Same with, you know, 50. Usually it's like a 50-yard zero has a secondary zero of 250 yards. That's very similar, obviously. But again, you're looking at having a much greater arc. So the rise, you know, your max ord on a 50 and 250 is considerably larger. So if you're trying to be a little more precise, there's a potential chance for a miss there. And again, if you're zeroing at 100, well, then you're basically just dealing with pure drop after that. And that's why we zero our precision rifles at 100 yards, because we don't have to mess around with any of the numbers. We just have to adjust up for drop every single time. But a 36-yard zero, it's pretty nice to zero at 36 and have a secondary zero right around 300 point of aim, point of impact. And then most ARs running at about that distance are 1 mil drop out to 400. So it's pretty simple to have contact distance of zero, like CQB-type distances, all the way out to 400 yards with very minimal adjustment of your optic, and that's what you want, you know. And you figure if you've got just a pure red dot on your optic, you don't have crosshairs or any kind of turrets or anything to dial elevation, you know, you set a 36 and 300, and then if you want to go to 400, just look at what your drop does, you know, in your ballistic solver and see how many inches that is. It's something like 12 to, you know, it's anywhere from like 12 to 14 inches of drop for that 400-yard target. So really, you know, if you put your red dot right on somebody's nose and mouth region, that bullet's going to drop into the center mass again. So you really can be quite effective quickly, you know, with a 36 and 300-yard zero. So just wanted to throw that out again. And there's another concept that I'm not nearly as familiar with. I have tried it briefly. I tried it in a class where it was originally taught to me, but this is the idea of danger space. And danger space really works well for a bolt action. you know, whether it's a 308 or a, you know, a 6.5 or whatever it might be, it doesn't really matter. You just figure out your numbers. But the idea is that, you know, and it was designed, I believe, by the Army for Army snipers. And the idea of danger space is, let's say that you believe your maximum distance that you're going to have to engage targets as a sniper is out to 400 yards. And you're trying to provide, you know, overwatch for a ground force or something like that. And you need to be able to hit these targets quickly without having to range and dial and hold over and do all these things. So if that's the case, let's just say the example here that I found on the internet. So I'm just kind of quoting here, but it says, consider a 308 action, a 308 bolt action rifle. The hold for a 400 meter target is 2.5 mils. The max ordnance of that happens at around 220 meters, and it is 0.6 mils above that line of sight. So what you do is you basically dial out the max ordnance. So you've got 2.5 mils minus the 0.6, leaves you with 1.9 mils. And there's a constant, an equation here. If you want to figure out how many inches you have to work with, you take that 1.9 mils times a constant of 3.937, and that times 2.2, and in this example, it gives you 16.45 inches, and that's the, you know, that's the exact point above, you know, your line of sight where your bullet's going to be. It's a fairly significant rise above, but what it does is, if you dial your scope in, you know, to that 2.5 mils, to your hold for your 400 meter target at 2.5 mils, if you dial that into your scope, and then you hold down at a person's belt line or waistline, and you know that, you know, your bullet's going to rise 16 inches roughly, then anywhere from, you know, close range, like your zero range or whatever, all the way out to 400 meters, all you have to do is hold belt line, and that bullet's going to, you know, the placement is going to be in the, you know, all the way from the belt line, 16 inches up to the high center chest. And that's called danger space. You don't have to dial anything after you dial that original number. So you're really just dialing on your hold. And then instead of holding that and it requiring that a target be at that distance or at certain distances throughout your curve, you can just hold that number down at the belt line. And it doesn't matter if a target pops out at 175 yards or 310 yards. If you hold at their belt line, you're still going to get a center mass hit. So it makes it really quick. That's pretty handy. It's a pretty handy technique. Just to know, I mean, you and me, the average dude, like I can't imagine when we would ever need that, but it's just another concept that people aren't necessarily aware of. And it's just good to remember. And I guess maybe the theme of this podcast is just talking about things that people don't know about, or generally don't know about the precision rifle game or this world. Like I made a video this last week of how to level a scope. And what I thought was a fairly standard little trick about how to level a scope by using a flashlight, you shine a flashlight, through the objective lens of your optic, and it casts, you know, an image of your reticle onto a wall or something like that. And on your wall, you true and plumb a crosshair line on your wall, you know, with a contractor's level or something precise. You just want to make sure that it's exactly level and plumb when you draw that line on your wall or a piece of cardboard that's on your wall or whatever. It has to be true and plumb and true. And then when you shine that light through your optic and it casts that image of your reticle, well, then you just turn your reticle to match up with those lines that you drew on your wall. And now you have a perfectly level reticle. And the only trick to that is tightening back down your rings without that thing shifting at all. But it's just another way to level a scope. I mean, there's so many ways to do it. You know, you got the plumb bob line, you got tools like the dead level, you got all kinds of different manufacturers that make scope leveling kits of various types and kinds. But I was just really surprised in the comments section of that video, just how many people were like, man, I never knew about this. Thank you. This is a cool trick. Like, I was like, man, I thought that was just kind of general knowledge. But then I was out at the range again today. And, you know, many people, I think, kind of assume that when it comes to long range shooting, they have to have a chronograph. And to get feet per second, we need feet per second in our solver in order for that to be accurate. So a lot of people go, well, how do you get feet per second? Well, you have to buy a chronograph. Well, no, you don't. You don't have to buy a chronograph. You know, any, even a 308, start at 300 yards on a fairly large target and go down range and with paint or whatever it is, take and spray paint a water line across the middle of that target as nice and clean as you can across the middle of that target. And then whether it's 308 or 6mm or 6.5 or whatever it is you're shooting, put about 1 mil onto your scope for a 300 yard target and hold dead center on that target and see where your rounds group. And if they're slightly high, well, you know that your feet per second is higher than whatever the box of ammo said, or whatever the internet said that bullet should be going at. You know what I mean? And so, like, for example, today I was shooting a 6GT, and, you know, it's Hornady 108 grain. I don't have it right in front of me, but, you know, the box says that it runs at 2875 or something like that feet per second in their tested rifle. Well, you know, I put, I think I initially in my solver, I put 2925 in there for the feet per second, or 2910 or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But then I put that thing at 1 mil on a 300 yard target today, and it was almost dead nuts in the center when I took my shot. And that tells me that feet per second was very, very close. So now I can leave that number, that feet per second number, in my solver, my Kestrel or whatever it is, and I can go on to the next yardage, let's say 400 yards. And I just do whatever the Kestrel says. Let's say it's 1.5 out to 400 yards. So I dial on 1.5, I take my shot on my water line out there on the 400 yard target. And let's say it drops low this time. I needed more, you know, clicks. I needed more tenths, mils, whatever to get it to line up in the center. That means the bullet's going slower than what I actually thought. So now I'm going to go into my solver and I'm going to adjust my feet per second. I'm going to be like, okay, well, it's actually going slower than that. So I'm going to look at my numbers, and I originally dialed 1.5, and it actually took 1.7 to get there. So now I just tweak my feet per second until that drop for the 400-yard target, you know, lines up with 1.7. And now I've got 300-yard dope trued, 400-yard dope trued. Let's say I go to 5, and I do the same thing. I go to 6, I do the same thing. At about 700 or 800 yards, you stop using muzzle velocity to true up your numbers, and you start changing the BC of the bullet, because the BC of a bullet changes as the bullet slows down with it when it gets further out. And also, it's best to do it kind of around the transonic zone. But if you don't have, you know, 1400 yards or 1500 yards or whatever it is to deal with to actually see where that BC matters most, well, start it at, say, 800 yards. If you have access to 1,000 yards, start it at 800 yards. So you shoot your 800-yard target, and let's say you're off a little bit. Now, instead of adjusting feet per second number, you're going to adjust your BC in order to get your data to line up. And what that does is it just really, you're building a curve manually in your solver is all you're doing. But by doing that process, you're also truing up your muzzle velocity number. So that muzzle velocity is going to be fixed without having a chronograph by doing it that way. And, you know, I'm kind of amazed at the people I meet that just don't know that you can do that. You know, you just measure it and change it in the solver. You don't need a chronograph. And, you know, it's just kind of, it's just fun. I mean, it's nothing revolutionary. And for you guys who have been around the game long enough, I'm not telling you anything you didn't already know, but, you know, some new folks, a lot of new folks actually come here, and I have to just apologize to you new folks. I think a lot of us here that run these types of channels and podcasts and whatever, we've been around the game so long, and there's so much just knowledge rattling around in our brains that we don't stop and think about when a new person comes into it, they're searching for all of the little tidbits that we just kind of overlook and assume and forget about. And, you know, so I guess it's hard to create content like this, because you want to create it for the largest audience. But what we end up doing is kind of focusing in on these skill sets that we know the best. And it leaves out the new guy. And I don't want to do that. I want to reiterate the simple stuff. I want to go back and remember the basics and just try to, you know, speak into that stuff, because it helps people. And, you know, at the end of the day, if I'm just out here doing this thing and, you know, doing it as a job and calling it work, but I'm not really helping anybody, well, I don't want to do it anymore. So, you know, you new folks, you're the bread and butter. And I want to remember to just tell you all this stuff that I kind of just come up on. It comes in my mind sometime and we haven't shared about it before. So anyway, I thought that was good. Brief update, maybe just a conundrum on my Bullet Seeker Mach 4 chronograph. The reason out at the range today that I had to do things the old manual way, and I made a video about it, was because my Bullet Seeker wasn't working. I'm not sure what was up with that. It was connecting with my phone just fine. The app on the phone was running perfectly. I mean, I didn't have any trouble building profiles and strings of fire, and you know, the cell phone and the Bullet Seeker were talking together, you know what I mean? Communicating, Bluetooth, whatever. Everything seemed to be working on that front, but there was one time I wasn't even shooting a rifle. I was just holding the Bullet Seeker, and it was kind of like pointed out into the wind, and it was almost like the Bullet Seeker was picking up the wind, because it was like reading something like 400 feet per second, 500 feet per second, something like that. But then when I had it attached to the gun, it was not picking up any projectiles coming out of the gun at all on my son's AR-15. And it was super frustrating, because I had it attached, and I tried attaching it to the rifle in a number of different ways. It comes with this little tripod thing. I tried attaching it to that and sitting it next to the rifle. I literally just tried hand holding it next to the barrel. Could not get that thing to read for the life of me. Anyway. Issues. So that was what started the video today. So I've got this thing sitting here on the charger now, trying to just charge up to full battery. I wonder if the batteries got low. I mean, it never shut off on me or anything like that. But maybe if the battery gets really low, it's just not working as well, not as sensitive or something. I don't know, guys. We took my son's gun out to the range today, and it's just when he turned 18 this year, He wanted an AR-15, and so we bought all the parts and, you know, helped him learn how to build an AR, and we wanted a little more of a DMR style, so we put an 18-inch barrel on it. I believe it's a Proof 1/8, and it's nice, man. I mean, it shoots really well. We've got the Catalyst Arms Fast Track rail up on front, which has got the Arca Swiss built into it. We've got him just a standard flash hider on it, but actually it's a flash hider that accepts the dead air Sandman, like Q-Mod. I can't remember what the quick attachment is right now for those suppressors. But I've got a can like that, so he can take my can and when we're together and slap it onto his rifle if he wants to. Just got standard, you know, Magpul rear furniture on there. Nothing too fancy. It's got a nice trigger in it. Yeah, it's a nice little rifle, and he's got a Swamp Fox 1-10 LPVO up on top. It's lighted, fixed parallax at about 100 yards, something like that. But we just needed to dope it out, you know, make sure it was zeroed at 36, and then we doped it out so we could get him some 400, 500, 600 yard dope, and that all went as planned and went pretty well. You guys see a video on that coming out, not this coming weekend, but next weekend. And I also got to run the foundation stock for the first time. So I've had Terminus actions for a while. You guys have been around this channel, you know that. It's my favorite custom bolt action. And just because it's super easy to swap, it's super easy to build things and swap barrels and calibers and whatever. So I had a 6GT barrel that was spun up. I believe that one in particular was spun up by GA Precision. I take that back. He had the 308. Yeah, GA did the 308. That's right. And Ryan Hunt, down at Hunt's Long Range, did the 6GT for me. So I had the Terminus action and the 6GT, and I slapped it into to the foundation stock. And I got to tell you guys, those foundation stocks are really nice. Like, I've been a Manners guy for a long time, and the Manners stocks, I would say, I'd say you're like green apples to red apples. You're apples to apples. There's just some tiny differences between a foundation and a Manners, but they're very, very similar. Foundation, I think what people like the most is the material just really deadens vibrations. And I did notice that today. Now, 6GT and a heavy rifle like that really does not recoil all that much at all. But I could tell the difference between running an MDT ACC chassis, one of the older original ones. That has a lot of vibration in it. So after you take a shot, you kind of get the tuning fork kind of effect, you know, where it's vibrating for a while. Well, the foundation stock just deadens all that vibration out. And I didn't have any trouble spotting impacts and misses and stuff like that and getting data back with which to make follow-up shots. And that's what you want. That's really what you want. So it's pretty nice. I might have to take it to a match or something and see how it goes. Like, there's actually a centerfire match out at Gadsden here in Missouri tomorrow. And they were setting up for it today, and I didn't even know there was a match. Well, I knew there was a match, technically. I thought it was a 22 long rifle match. But it turned out to be a centerfire match. Either way, I can't go. I've got stuff tomorrow with family getting ready to go down to Altus. And this is a transition into what I'm talking about last here today is I like to do, you know, personal improvement trips. I like to do training. I love to learn new things or just reiterate old skills that maybe I haven't focused on in a while. And something that I have not focused on in a while, probably 2 years, maybe 3 years now, has been AR-15, like a carbine course. You know, just fundamentals of running a carbine, whether it's around vehicles or, you know, in and around cover, concealment, those sorts of things. Just transitions from a carbine to a pistol backup. Just reloads, malfunctions, anything and everything with a carbine. I haven't done it in a long time. And I thought, I'm going to take a class. So I got to looking around. I love Florida. I love the ocean and all that kind of stuff. So whenever I want to get out and away, I like to go to the ocean, wherever that may be. This time it's taken me down to Altus Shooting Solutions, which I've, you know, you guys, if you've been around here, you know, I love that range, good people down there. And Altus has a 2-day carbine class this next weekend that I'll be taking. And looking forward to that. Should be about 1,000 rounds of 5.56 shot in this course. Another 200 rounds of pistol. Really looking forward to it. It's just got a great course description, and just should be a ton of fun to do. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. And I'll let you guys know how that goes. I'll probably do another podcast or even some video about that while I'm down there. But it should be a lot of fun. Gonna be doing that, and then actually, my wife is gonna fly out and meet me, and we're gonna go and hit up the Smoky Mountains for a week and do family stuff. So I'm not sure when the next podcast will come, hopefully in the next couple of weeks after I have a chance to do that class and go to Altus, I'll have something else to talk about. Again, hit up those sponsors for us, guys, and give them some love, and please share the podcast and, of course, the videos, because that helps the algorithms and helps us, you know, fight back against YouTube, which is trying to demonetize us all the time. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you again in the next one.